From KCRW, this is Greater LA. I'm Steve Chiotakis with a show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. On a suburban street in East LA, if you enter one particular two-story home, you'll pass through a bright yellow entryway. You'll notice the walls are covered in paintings of the ocean, meant to remind you that no matter where you came from, or how long it took you to get here, you have made it to Southern California.
I couldn't believe it that I was here in California, because I'm usually not like a beach person. But to be honest with you, I'm loving it. I'm loving it because I feel safe here for the first time of my life.
That's Sarah, who's been living in California and in this house since March. And this house is called Hope House, which stands for Helping Our People Evolve. It's a transitional housing service for trans, gender nonconforming, and intersex people in Los Angeles, a place for them to land when they're forced to leave everything they know for their own safety. Now, the house is a safe haven for folks like Sarah, who are navigating an often hostile, sometimes dangerous world while trying to build a life of joy and fulfillment. Reporter Steph Brown picks up the story from here.
Sarah Reyes was assigned male at birth in Bucaramanga, Colombia. But she started feeling doubts about her gender in elementary school.
As I started growing up, that I was feeling that something was going well. Like, for instance, my hair growing up and my boys being deeper every day passing.
And these thoughts that she wasn't comfortable in her own body, they were not something people were used to. She was bullied in elementary school and assaulted in high school.
I think it's a really hard place when you want to discover yourself, because there was no information about how to describe yourself if you feel like you're not fitting the role that you was born with.
And so growing up, Sarah turned inward. She focused on school and studied to be a lawyer. In her final year of law school, she landed a job at a big national firm in commercial law. And while it wasn't the type of job that she dreamed about, she was excited to imagine where this new skill set could take her.
I decided to study law because I love to work with the community, and I love to work with someone that is struggling with something.
During school, Sarah also started to find the words and medical help for what she was feeling. She started taking hormone blockers to medically transition. She didn't tell anyone at first.
At the time, just for my own safety, I was trying to do it as neutral as possible, just to avoid anything, because I know that at the time, a lot of transgender activists were killed. So that's it. I feel like I needed to hide myself.
Sarah was also scared she would lose everything if people found out. Her family, her friends, and her career. But as time went by, it became clear hiding and avoiding this huge part of herself wasn't sustainable.
And it is really hard when for 23 years of your life, you don't love yourself, like nothing.
So she decided to come out.
And I was like, okay, I need to start doing something for myself, and I need to start working in this process.
And that Sarah told her dad first.
I remember his words. He was like, I don't have a lot of experience with this, but for you, I'm willing to try and learn everything that I can so I can make it easier for you.
Her mom was a little harder, but eventually she came around, and it felt good for Sarah to be out and accepted. And so she decided to tell the law firm where she worked.
Well, they were like, yes, I understand you can do that, but don't do it here. Mm-hmm. And if you continue here, we might lose anything just because you're trans, and we're not going to support that.
Sarah moved to Bogota and applied to law firms there, but she didn't get any interviews. Her name change, which you could tell from a simple background check, confused people, and often, she thinks, made employers believe she had a criminal background. She says she was also assaulted in Bogota. Sarah took a job for a while at a call center, leaning on her dad for both emotional and financial support. Until...
In 2021, my father passed away. And I was getting really, really scared because he was the only one that was helping me. And I was just going crazy. I was like, what is going to be? What am I going to do? I don't have anyone that can support me, and no one wants me as well. No one wants a transgender woman.
As she was grieving her father and panicking about what she would do next, Sarah reached out to a cousin in the U.S. for advice. Her cousin told her about the Trans Latin Now Coalition, an L.A.-based organization that helps the trans, gender nonconforming, and intersex community. They might help her apply for asylum in the States.
And as soon as she told me that, I just decided to leave everything behind.
And so on March 29th of this year, Sarah used most of her savings to book a one-way flight to L.A. She took a single suitcase and her dad's handkerchief and watch. She stayed in an Airbnb for a night. And then, with no cash left, went to the Trans Latin Now Coalition headquarters, downtown. Sarah was assigned a case manager, who proceeded with her intake process.
And I just remembered that smile. She was really sweet and nice. And she was like, we're going to do something and we're going to help you. Don't worry.
Later, Sarah's case manager took her to the Hope House in East LA, where she's been staying while she applies for asylum. More than 200 people have spent a night at Hope House since it opened 5 years ago.
So this is the kitchen. This is our shared space. Over here, we do have the stove. So
5 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, and a living room accommodate 13 people at a time. There is art and flowers everywhere.
Some Hawaiian flowers because the theme this year for our pride was blossoming. So
some residents stay at the Hope House for a few days for free. Others stay up to 6 months and pay a small rent, with the promise of that money being repaid when they leave. Sarah is still insecure about her English, anxious about her asylum process, and terrified of high rent in L.A. But she feels comfortable here.
And for sure, I 100%, I would say, I feel definitely safe here. I know that this is not a perfect country, for sure. We don't have any perfect countries out there. But this was a place that you can actually feel freedom.
According to unpublished data collected by CSU San Bernardino, hate crimes in LA targeting the trans community increased nearly 70% from 2021 to 2022. Jimena Sandoval, the Hope House's PR coordinator, told me they're feeling it too.
Actually, the coalition even received a bomb threat.
And that's why the Hope House is very diligent about security.
You're the first person that has access to the Hope House. We have never let anybody not even know where we are. And that is for the people that lives here.
Safety is essential for Hope House residents, but it's not a place to hide. The house is meant to be an empowering space where people can grow and find community.
A lot of the people that are living here, they're being through a lot of stuff. It can be sexual abuse, it can be drug addiction, it can be episodes of mental health. That's why we believe that having this space, that it's more like home.
No, thank you.
Do you want some vegetables?
Jimena says she wants the Hope House to be a place where everyone staying there, including Sarah, can recover, heal, and imagine a better future. For KCRW, I'm Steph Brown.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled.
This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
All right, moving on now with Greater LA, and you just heard about the real experience of one resident of Hope House. These days, how often are stories about the experiences of the LGBTQ plus community being represented by Hollywood on the big and small screen? Well, every year, GLAAD, the world's largest LGBTQ plus media advocacy organization, creates what's called a Studio Responsibility Index, SRI, to answer that question. And Megan Townsend is GLAAD's Senior Director of Entertainment Research and Analysis and the lead author of this year's report. She joins us now to talk about what they found. Hey, Megan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
GLAAD has been putting this SRI, is what they call it, Studio Responsibility Index, for a couple of decades now. What are the goals, and why has your organization been so committed to tracking LGBTQ plus representation in film and on television?
This is our 11th edition of the Studio Responsibility Index that we just put out last week in partnership with SAG and the WGA. And we really launched the report in 2013 to look at where LGBTQ stories were being told in major film releases, but also to look at the quality and the diversity of those stories. So beyond just being there, how diverse are those parts of the community that we're seeing, who's missing, and also what is the quality? Are we moving beyond stereotypes and tropes into really useful stories that are helping move progress forward?
Because it used to be just being gay and the drama around coming out, or the drama around whatever, you know, family dynamic is going on. That was sort of the main, the central theme of a movie or of a TV show. Now it's really something different, right?
Yeah, so everything that we are looking at is entirely character-based. So for every character that we look at, we look at multiple dimensions of identity. So we are tracking sexual orientation, we're tracking gender identity, we look at race, we look at disability, all of these kinds of things, as well as screen time of those characters, to really be able to figure out who is missing from those stories that we are seeing, and where there's opportunity for growth and to do better with an audience who is being underserved, but also to celebrate those great titles that we do have. This is actually the first time in 11 editions of the report that we had three studios receive a good grade in the same year. So we're seeing that progress is definitely happening. There's still just more work to be done.
And in order to gauge all of this, y'all have to watch a lot of TV and movies, right? Like, this is an enormous amount of entertainment.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, my team does both our Studio Responsibility Index, which is our annual film study, as well as our Where We Are on TV study, which looks at broadcast cable and streaming programming. Film distribution in 2023 is a lot different than when we started this report in 2013. And so this year we actually started tracking streaming originals as well. So we had a huge data set to pull from this year. We actually had 350 films across 10 top studio distributor and streaming services. And what we found was that 100 of those, or 28.5%, included an LGBTQ character this year in 2022.
28%. So more than a quarter.
Yeah, it's the highest percentage that we have ever had, but there is context around the fact that we went from 77 movies the last year to 350 this year.
Well, you mentioned that it's the first time that there are three studios that got a good grade. Which studios were they?
Yeah, so A24, NBC Universal, and Walt Disney all earned good grades for their 2022 slates. So looking across those studios, you know, you have titles like Everything Everywhere All at Once from A24. You have Bros from NBC Universal, which was one of few movies to include a trans character, especially a black trans character. And then with Disney, you have titles like Strange World, which was really a great story for kids and all age audiences, as well as Fire Island, which actually won a GLAAD Media Award earlier this year.
This report, the SRI, looks at representation on screen, but what about people who are behind the screen, right? Who are behind the camera, the below the line folks, you know, in the LGBTQ plus community? Is that something that you guys study as well?
Our research does go off of character and what is being presented on screen to those audiences. That said, we do a lot of work year round to make sure that LGBTQ performers, writers, directors, creatives are getting those opportunities to have a spotlight put on their work. So, for example, this was actually the first report that included some scripts that had been made from our annual GLAAD list, which is a list that we put out every year of promising unmade LGBTQ film scripts. And again, we were so lucky this year that we were able to put out the Studio Responsibility Index in partnership with the Screen Actors Guild and with the Writers Guild to be able to talk about the fact that labor issues are LGBTQ issues, and we hope to see a fair deal come soon from the AMPTP so that people can get back to work and we can continue to have forward moving in this progress that we saw this year.
Well, are y'all concerned about that? The strikes have really put a halt to a lot of Hollywood production. I mean, do you think that that could thwart the progress that you say that you're making?
I think, you know, we are aware that there is danger here. The longer that studios are keeping people from being able to work and to tell those stories, and, you know, every character and story loss that we have is reflected in culture with losses at legislatures, in classrooms, in libraries, in homes and living rooms. And so what we hope to see, again, is for AMPTP to reach a fair deal, give everybody the protections and payment that they deserve, and be able to get people back to work on telling those great stories.
Megan Townsend is GLAAD's Senior Director of Entertainment Research and Analysis. Megan, thanks for coming on and talking with us. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Coming up on GLA, hear about a man who came to the U.S. as a boy, undocumented, but is now truly living the American dream, and how immigrants are more optimistic about this country than even native-born citizens. Gustavo Arellano's in after this short break. More now of Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The California housing crisis continues, but one immigrant is finding a way to help young home buyers in Orange County. Julio Arana moved to the United States without papers when he was just 8 years old. Today, decades later, he's a real estate agent and owner of multiple homes, creating his own American dream in the OC. LA Times columnist and GLA regular Gustavo Arellano joins us now to tell us more about the story. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
You write about Julio in the Times. Tell us a little bit about him.
Julio is your typical Mexican metalhead. So he plays in a band, tatted up, long hair. He was my former student at Cal State Fullerton, geez, like 13 years ago. And he took two of my classes. But I remember then, I'm like, this kid, he still doesn't know what he wants to do with himself, but he is going to be successful at whatever he does. And, you know, I'm proud to say all these years later, he absolutely has and then some, made something of himself.
In the real estate business in Orange County, and particularly helping young home buyers, right? He says he's focusing on the young home buyers because he knows how difficult it is.
Yeah, so the LA Times, we did a survey with the Kaiser Family Foundation talking about how immigrants, despite everything in this country right now, despite all the hardships, they still remain more optimistic in the American dream than native-born Americans. And so when my bosses said, hey, can you write something off of that? Well, first I'm like, well, that's kind of duh. Like, if you live in that world, like, it's not a surprise. But then I thought to myself, I'm like, this is a great way to talk about Julio and talk about someone who, you know, he's very much, you know, his politics are left. He has his critiques of the United States, but he loves this country. And the way he tells me, it's like the best way that I could really make an impact on this, you know, on this country is by helping other people buy. And because he, I mean, it's funny because he has his politics, but then he talks as a real estate agent. It's all about property. It's all about buying. It's all about investment. Like, he is just a capitalist totally in that sense.
And this, by the way, Gustavo, comes at a time when, you know, a lot of cities in Orange County are fighting against state mandates to develop affordable housing, right? Like, Aranis is trying to sort of turn that on its head.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is selling houses and buying houses in an incredibly impacted market. The most recent property that he acquired, he beat 25 offers. Him and his partner beat 25 offers to get that house. And I've now known, geez, at least five friends of mine who have gone through Julio. Like, you know, on Instagram, his Instagram account is Rock and Roll Realtor, and he does these reels. I mean, he's a millennial, so he knows how to do it more so than you and I on Instagram. And he's making offers. He's telling people exactly this is what you do to save a house. You know, and he posts these stories on his account, like really inspirational stories, like, you know, young couple who both parents or both children of immigrants who made it, a single mom, immigrants themselves, and not just Latinos, of course, but just anyone who he thinks, like, I really do believe in what you want in this country because I was once in your shoes. So let's try to make something out of it. And more often than not, he does, even in this crazy market.
Talk about that optimism.
I mean, that I could just tell from my own family. Both of my parents grew up in poverty in ranchos, not even villages. We're talking population 200, 300, came to this country with nothing, were able to make something of themselves just by hard work. And then you come to my generation, and I saw all the sacrifices that my parents made. So I was not going to take what the United States offers for granted. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of problems with this country. There's a lot of problems with Southern California and especially Orange County. But this is home. And I own my own home. My sister owns her own home. Also, in the story that I did about Julio, I talked about my cousin Placido Miranda. He's the last of his six siblings to buy a house. And he's a Frito-Lay driver. But because of the values that our immigrant parents instilled in us, not just the hard work, but also, hey, believe in this country. Don't whine about it. Make something. It's far better than where we came from. That's what drives so many immigrants and their children. And as I argue, this is optimism in the United States is what this country needs right now. Like, that is the one thing I think that can save us. And it transcends political ideologies, by the way, because I hear people on the left saying, oh, this country's over. I hear people on the right saying this country's over. And my response to them is like, wow, you guys are really spoiled to be saying that. You don't know what bad is. And you thank God that you don't know what bad is.
Well, and you look at, you know, sort of the opposite of that optimism is the anti-immigrant sentiment that's in the country. You've got, you know, and even Julio himself has had interactions with, you know, like seeing swastikas on the sides of houses and things like, you know, it's like, so there, that optimism is really pared down.
Oh, my God. Well, you want to talk about full circle. So Julio told me the very first property he ever bought in Desert Hot Springs, he had to evict bona fide neo-Nazis. This most recent property that he bought in Santana, there's a big bas relief swastika in the driveway on the house in stucco. And he's very charitable. He's like, well, you know, the previous owner was a World War II veteran. So maybe it was like a shrine to hate the Nazis, because a lot of World War II veterans do collect, you know, Nazi memorabilia. But still, but he's like, this is totally full circle. Like, here in Santana, such a Latino city with this swastika, it's kind of creepy. But hey, let's take a selfie. Let's look at it and just really, you know, think about how some of us are way more optimistic than others. And optimism is what this country needs.
Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times, of course, a regular here on GLA. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, he is a self-proclaimed weirdo. Director and filmmaker John Waters has a new exhibit of props and costumes and notes at the Academy Museum on Wilshire Boulevard. He comes on to talk about the show and the Hollywood strike, why he's in show business but doesn't live in Los Angeles. All that tomorrow. on Greater LA, an exciting interview, too. I hope you'll join us for that. Visit us online at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. Share with us a story idea you might have. Of course, grab the podcast, too. We'd love to be in your lineup telling you about Los Angeles and the Greater LA area on the go. kcrw.com/GLA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Zeke Reed, Celine Mendiola, Phil Richards, Sonia Geis, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Mike Vogel, Evan Ray, and Christian Bordahl. All help make the show happen. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time this evening. Have a great night.